It's Hurricane Hotline on the home of the U. AM 560 and FM 96.5 HD2 WQAM. Driven by Williamson Cadillac. For value, style, and performance, visit Miami's premier luxury dealership. Click WilliamsonCadillac.com now. Here's Don Bailey Jr. and the voice of the Hurricanes, Joe Zagacki.
All right, Joe Zagacki alongside University of Miami Athletic Director Dan Radakovich. Miami and Florida, what a great matchup. Hurricanes and the Gators, great way to begin the football season, isn't it?
No doubt about it. And anytime the University of Miami and the University of Florida get together in any sport, it's a big event. And certainly in football it is. So this is one of those great non-conference games that we have an ability to play in. And, you know, as the 12-team playoff becomes part of our everyday work, we're going to make sure that we have good non-conference matchups into the future as well, as our scheduling opportunities will allow us. But nod to my predecessor, Blake James, for putting this game together. It's a good one, and something that we're looking forward to being up here in the Swamp this year. And next year, the Gators will come down to Hard Rock Stadium.
Now, speaking of that, Miami and Florida did play every year until 1987, and now it's been sporadic since 87. Any future discussions about Miami and Florida playing?
Well, Scott Strickland and I have known each other for a while. You know, I think that people were waiting on some scheduling opportunities, you know, to see where, did the SEC go to 9 games? Did the ACC go to 9 games? How are all these things going from a conference perspective? But Scott and I definitely will run into each other, you know, over the weekend, and we'll see where we can maybe take the next step to get another one of these series on the books.
I think it's a great game for really for the players. You know, most of the players are from in-state, I think. So a great opportunity for them to participate in this game. Some will go through their careers and never have a Miami-Florida matchup.
Yeah, and that's difficult. And, you know, obviously that was one of the things within the ACC that we wanted to make sure that, you know, student-athletes who were within the ACC had the ability to play everyone in the league before they left. That was a massive scheduling lift by the conference, and then they finally got it pulled together, and then they added Cal, Stanford, and SMU, and that's not going to happen. but we're excited about, you know, obviously this game. We're excited about the year, and you know, I think Mario has done a great job in pulling together not only a quality coaching staff, but a really good group of young men who are here to, you know, represent the University of Miami, play for the University of Miami, understanding, you know, the history and tradition at the University of Miami, and, you know, want to get it off on a great note by having a victory here at Florida.
A Miami-Florida matchup or a non-conference matchup of this magnitude, from an administrative standpoint, I know you didn't negotiate this one, but when you do negotiate these kind of games, how hard are those negotiations? I don't think fans understand. A lot of things come into play, right? Home and home, how many tickets, all this stuff that goes on. How hard is it to negotiate a big game like this?
It depends on, you know, whether you have a willing dance partner. You know, a couple of years ago, when I was back at my former school, I made a call to the athletic director at Georgia, and I said, you guys have a terrible schedule, and so do I. You want to get together and play. And it was at the beginning of, I believe, the 2021 year, what it might have been 2021, I think it was. And everybody was in for it because they knew that their schedule just wasn't that good from a strength of schedule perspective, and neither was Clemson's during that year. So you had a willing dance partner to be able to make a one-off game happen. But into the future, you know, we just look at schools that, you know, want to come down to South Florida and play a game, and some places that we might want to go to make sure that we continue to see our alumni base, you know, have a great, you know, opportunity for, you know, to get into a market where we do a lot of recruiting. So a lot of those things go into play. But football scheduling is not easy because you have to do it so far ahead, and you're projecting how teams might be.
Good get on the Clemson, Georgia, by the way, playing before Miami and Florida. They're separated by what, 100 miles or less? What is it?
Yeah, 90 miles. And as Graham Neff, the current Clemson athletic director said, if Clemson's successful on Saturday against Georgia, I scheduled that game. And if they're not successful, Radakovich scheduled the game. Okay, so that's kind of how it's going to work.
All right. Third year for Coach Cristobal. He's been relentless in trying to rebuild the program. And it's been interesting because so much has changed since both you and he arrived here. And just in terms of how fast you can put a roster together.
No question. I mean, the whole landscape of intercollegiate athletics has changed dramatically. And, you know, I think that one of the things that Mario and the staff have done and the university and all of us here is that we've hopefully adapted quickly to some of those changes to be able to get the quality players, not only in football, but in some of our other sports as well, here on campus. So, this is going to be obviously a big test, on Saturday, but I feel really good about where Mario's taken the program to this point.
And we do have a 12-team playoff. The good news in this deal is it's a 12-team playoff, so everybody has a chance to recover. And I think you're going to see, considering the conferences now, I think you're going to see far fewer undefeated teams.
You know, you're probably right, Joe. I think that, I'll probably hold off on that one because great teams, they're great teams, And, at the end of the day, the 2019 LSU team was a great team. Yeah. And they would have beaten a lot of teams along the way. And they actually did. They beat some really good teams along the way. But it's really how, we've expanded the interest, basically tripling the number of teams that are in the playoff. So instead of having teams maybe 1 through 8, maybe having an opportunity to get into those 4-team playoffs, now you might be into 17, 18, 19, 20 teams, as you get into the end of the season that have a shot to be able to get into that top 12. So I think it's going to be great for college football. I think the idea of having home games in December for those seeds 5, 6, 7, and 8 are going to be just magnificent. I mean, it's going to really kind of accentuate, how great college football is in so many unique environments throughout the country.
We have a lot of moving targets on how you put your roster together. What do you foresee, or do you foresee changes in transfer portal dates and also recruiting dates?
Yeah, I think we will see that. I'm on a committee that, kind of talked through that of whether we have 2 transfer windows or 1 transfer window. And right now the idea is to send forward, a 1 transfer window option from December through some point in January. I think long term, once we get through the House case and get that, everything that we've read to this point in time, solidified, and the judge signs off on everything and it becomes our new reality, I think as we kind of move into the spring of 2025, I think there may be a need for a second transfer window just for student athletes who, may have the opportunity. There's only going to be 105 roster spots in football. So, there's teams that carry 130, 120. 2,530 student athletes. So some of those people might be good enough to go get scholarship opportunities at other places, but if they can't transfer, they can't leave. Right. So it's going to become a little bit of a, there's more discussion that has to come forward. I mean, we don't have to make that decision today, but it's not far down the road when we have to get all these things, inked on a paper.
Can you explain to our listeners what it's going to look like? I guess, I don't know when this starts, you'll have to tell us, the roster size, scholarship limits or no limits. What is that going to look like in college athletics for the big sports, and how does it impact the University of Miami?
Well, we don't know. Part of the details that are still being worked out is when does the, for example, the 105 roster limit for football take place? Is that 105 as of August 1st? Is it 105 as of the first game? And each one of the roster limits, for baseball, the 34 roster limit in baseball, when is that? Is that, you know, right before your first game, or is it when you come back for the spring semester as you get into your final preparations for baseball? So a lot of those details are still being worked out. As a matter of fact, there's a fairly large group of attorneys and compliance people who are meeting this week, you know, to be able to talk through some of those details. So we'll have all of that in really good time, you know, shortly, and make sure we get it right.
Does it mean everybody's on scholarship, or does each university decide? If the NCAA, for example, says it's 105 for football, does every university say, okay, we'll give you 105 scholarships, or is it school by school?
It's school by school. I will tell you, and even the 105 scholarships, I mean, it is. And I don't know that everybody will get to 105 if they ever get to 105 full scholarship people, especially in the first year. You could have, in the past, you were never allowed to fractionalize football scholarships. It was either a walk-on or a full scholarship. Now you have the ability to give a half scholarship to a football player. So you could have 90 full scholarship people and 15 people on half scholarships, okay, for a total of 97 and a half scholarships. That math is correct quickly. But you don't have to have everyone on full scholarship. You can have walk-ons as well. You might have 90 full scholarships and 15 walk-ons. So it's every school is going to be a little different, because you have to take that into account on how you're going to impact women's sports and the number of scholarship opportunities there. So it's a little bit of a three-dimensional chessboard, but we'll get through it.
We are speaking with Dan Radakovich. You are on the oversight committee. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, we had our first committee meeting last week. It's the Football Oversight Committee takes into account some of the new opportunities that are working within football. Much like we talked a little bit a while ago about the transfer window, that really dominated the discussion of our first meeting. So we do have a couple of Zooms, and then we're in person in Indianapolis in October. So excited to be a part of that and see how we can help make the game better.
Okay, we know we have a little unrest in the ACC with the lawsuits with Clemson and Florida State, but the University of Miami is taking the position of, we're going to wait and see what happens here, and you're kind of observing.
Well, everyone is observing, but I think it's more fair to say that we're a proud member of the ACC. We're all in with the Atlantic Coast Conference. We feel like it's the best place for us as we sit here today. You have to say those kind of things because the world of college football and college athletics in general, changes so quickly. I think what Florida State is doing, what Clemson is doing, is important for their institutions. How they're looking at it and the reasons why are important for them. But for the league, we want to make sure we present an incredibly strong league. The league was great at the Olympics as far as, student athletes in those sports doing great things. Mm-hmm. I think that you're going to see a really deep and balanced conference in football as well. So I think that will be helpful for the national perception of the ACC. But Miami's an ACC member. I'm proud to be there.
It just popped into my head. I don't know why, but you look at the new Big Ten and the matchups that you could have. So with football, I think football is kind of easy. Oregon can play Rutgers and go across country. They'll survive that. But does everybody think that, like, Oregon, Rutgers, women's volleyball, all that stuff is going to work?
Yeah, I think that's probably the biggest question mark that's out there. And I think that it may, sometime downstream look at, for not only the Big Ten, but the ACC as well, and maybe some other conferences, more regionalized type scheduling, and maybe, pulling back a little bit from, the number of conference games that you have. Maybe have a set number of conference games, but you can go through and play people more regionally. Maybe come together for a tournament at the end of the year. Volleyball has not had a tournament in recent years, but, maybe that's something that comes back into play. Soccer, volleyball, there's a number of sports on the women's side that, are going to have these, transcontinental, type trips. But we'll see. We'll have to wait and see how it works out a little bit. But I think longer term, maybe some regionalization of those with an end of the year tournament to determine the conference champion might be something in a future.
Yeah, let's bring this back to the University of Miami Hurricanes. The Gators coming up. Great way to start the season. A lot of excitement around University of Miami football.
Oh, there is, and I want to thank our fans. We've sold more season tickets this year than we did the year before. Our single game sales are much higher than they've been in previous years. But, there are still season ticket opportunities available. So before our Florida A&M game on September 7th and Ball State on September 14th. So, after we beat the Gators on Saturday, let's make sure we continue to ring up the University of Miami ticket office, MiamiHurricanes.com, so that we can get some of those season ticket numbers higher for this year, because it's a great schedule this year. It's an incredible home schedule next year with Florida and Notre Dame there, along with NC State and Louisville. So next year we have 8 home games, and 4 of them are just off the chart, going to be incredible games at Hard Rock Stadium. So get your season tickets this year to make sure you're in good spot to be able to get them for next year.
That's 1-800-GO-CANES for tickets, or hurricanesports.com. Mentioned the schedule, and this year Florida State, Virginia Tech are on the schedule. Hokies a Friday night game because of strategic maneuvering, but it's a Friday night game. But you do have Virginia Tech, who's going to be very good, and Florida State coming here this year.
Oh gosh, I mean, those two games are going to be incredible. Those are the games that our student athletes are pointing towards. Great games, just like Saturday, great games that you come to the University of Miami to play in. So, we're excited about those two matchups. Virginia Tech is, they bring back, I think I heard over the weekend, 18 starters, and, it's a big number. And Florida State, don't let Saturday fool you. I think they're pretty good. I think Georgia Tech's pretty good too, and we get to go play in Atlanta on November 9th. So a lot of good football coming up in the ACC.
And by the way, last thing, while we're on season tickets and playing at home, Hard Rock Stadium, I still think, is a beautiful home venue for the University of Miami. When the Hurricanes are playing well, that stadium is really loud.
Oh, for sure. I mean, last year there was a couple of times, whether it was the Texas A&M game or certainly at the end of the Clemson game when we were in overtime. I've been blessed in my 35 years in college athletics to be at a lot of places and seen, been to a lot of stadiums. That was as loud as I've ever heard a stadium. I mean, I think the little canopies that keep the sound in there really amplify things, and it is a hard place for visitors to come in and play. So we need to do our part. I know the fans will do their part, and we'll have a great atmosphere there.
All right, Dan, thank you so much. Best of luck this year.
Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it.
Dan Radakovich joining us on the show. All right, South Florida is a beautiful place to live. It has a challenge or two every now and then. And when you think about it, the one thing that you want in South Florida as you navigate this area is great customer service. And so if you are in the market for a new automobile, may I recommend Williamson Automotive Group, Williamson Cadillac. If you are interested in a luxury automobile, how about the XT4 or perhaps maybe the CT5, the XT5, the XT6, the all-new, all-electric Lyriq? If you want to get the most out of the South Florida lifestyle and enjoy great customer service, Williamson Cadillac is the place to go. Williamson Cadillac, easy to find, right off the Palmetto Expressway, located on US 1 just south of the Palmetto. And of course, for 50 years, Ed Williamson, his lovely wife Carol, they've been our neighbors, they've been our friends. They pull you in and they treat you like family, because when you go to Williamson Cadillac, they want to make sure you're not only leaving with a great automobile, that you are leaving with a great experience. They want you to come back time after time. That's why they've been in business for over 50 years. Williamson Cadillac, get their preferred customer service. Easy to find, US 1, 104th Street, just south of the Palmetto. Experience a new Cadillac from your luxury dealership. Williamson Cadillac. Williamson is Miami.
Now back to Hurricane Hotline on the home of the U. AM 560 and FM 96.5 HD2 WQAM. Driven by Williamson Cadillac. For value, style, and performance, visit Miami's premier luxury dealership. Click WilliamsonCadillac.com now. Here's Don Bailey Jr. and the voice of the Hurricanes, Joe Zagacki.
All right, welcome back to the show. This is going to be fun for the next half hour or so. We've got Old Blue with us, and of course, Don Bailey Jr. Trevor Harris is our producer, thankfully, because when Trevor's with us, things run smoothly. you remember the days, Blue, when I was your producer?
Yeah, we had a great time out in the hallway playing during the news break, playing stickball with you. Yeah, that was great. Yeah, those were great times.
Don Bailey Jr. is with us. Blue, in the last segment or before we went to Dan Radakovich, Don and I were talking obviously about Miami and Florida, but sure. Don was in some great Miami, Florida games, and you have a great perspective of the series. What are some of the things that stand out to you? And you've been a guy that's watched this series not only recently, but back in the 70s and late 60s.
Yeah.
What comes to mind when you think about Miami and Florida?
Well, I remember the day that we went up and saw a Florida game. I think it was in 66. See, Spurrier was a quarterback, and it was just, to me, I think that was my first time ever in the Swamp. And, you know, interesting game. Miami had lost it, but, you know, just to watch Larry Rents and some of the guys that played, you know, in the South Florida area, that was great, because you see him at Carl Gables. And then, you know, the great Gator flop, which I had an opportunity to be in. I think that was my hatred part of the Gators, because I just thought that was unnecessary. And, you know, and I remember John Hornibrook, who was a quarterback for Miami at the time, he said if he knew that his touchdown run would have given them the ball back, he would have dropped to his knees. So, there's been some great games throughout the years. I remember that, you know, I was up in Florida Field for, I think, the last time Miami played up there. And, you know, I'll tell you what, you know, you're taking this series really is not – it's not the series that FSU is. I mean, let's face it. I mean, it's so interrupted, and you know, I mean, they don't play every year. I mean, back in the day they did, but to me, the FSU series is by far a better series, because there's a lot of mutual, respect from both sides. Here, a lot of kids don't really, a lot of Florida recruits a lot of Georgia kids that Miami didn't play against, and Florida hasn't really recruited South Florida that well. You know, in this cycle they are, but before that, they haven't done it. So there's been some really, really great games along the line. And, you know, I mean, and certainly, like I said, I mean, back in the day, everybody, it was the Hurricanes and the Gators. It was awesome. But it's kind of tailed off. But this Saturday is definitely going to be one of those games, one of the top five Lattos places in the country to play. Obviously, Texas and A&M, which you guys went to, and Clemson and LSU and those type of places. So, yeah, and Neyland Stadium, which I was at in 1979 when Willie Gault returned the opening kickoff and the stand shook. So there's a lot of great places, and hopefully they can rekindle this rivalry. It's going to be tough because, you know, the SEC now with the addition of Oklahoma and Texas. It makes it tough to be playing a team of Miami's caliber.
Blue, relive the flop for us. Well, you need to relive that flop, man. I want all the Hurricanes fans to realize what that flop was. A lot of people heard about it, but they don't know really what it was.
Yeah, it was horrible because John Reeves was trying to get a record, and they had a pretty good lead on Miami, and the thing is all of a sudden they let them, you know, no one really knew why. Gary Althede, who later, he picked off two passes for Miami, and he later became the head coach at North Miami Beach, and Gary and I talked about that often, and, you know, the thing is, Don, is that back in the day, it's not like now. You don't know everything. I mean, you know, they had those players had no clue John Reeves is closing in on a record. You know, nowadays they would know it automatically. So I remember talking with John Hornibrook, who was the Hurricanes quarterback at the time, and he's the one that scored that touchdown, you know, when they just flop down and let him score. And the thing was, is he even said at the end of the game, I think he talked to, at the time, Morris McLemore, who was on Channel 7. I still remember sitting there and listening to him. And he says, if I had any idea that that touchdown would have given him the record, I would have dropped to my knees, he said. And but, you know, and then after they get the record, they go and jump into the Flippers tank and trying to humiliate Miami, you know, on their own home field. And yeah, if you're a Hurricane fan, I know if you weren't a living there by, you know, at that time, that I'm telling you, that's enough to hate them for a lifetime. Yeah, for what they did, because they embarrassed Miami in the Orange Bowl, not only beating them, but rubbing it in their nose.
Yeah, the younger generation might not know.
No.
It's worth noting that John Reeves, as you mentioned, was trying to break a passing record, passing yards record.
Sure.
And
yeah,
so the Gators let Miami score. But to throw gas on the fire at the Orange Bowl in the 70s, because of the Seaquarium, there was a tank that had, yep, Flipper, and Flipper was in the tank. So when the Dolphins scored, Flipper would jump out of the tank. It was a little routine. And yep, the Gators, they ran and jumped in the tank. I don't think Flipper was there. I don't remember.
No. They took him away
for the Hurricane games. But they ran and they jumped in the tank behind the goalposts in the East End Zone and celebrated.
Humiliating
and humiliated Miami. That's right.
And it's on. If anybody goes to YouTube after the show, just go there and just put Great Gator Flop, and you'll see it. And you'll hear the play by play. And it's kind of, I think that they should show that to the Hurricanes on Friday night.
Yeah,
a couple years later, I would imagine they would. Blue.
Yeah.
A couple years later, there was a fair catch by, I think it was Henry Davis in 75.
Right.
His knee was on the ground. He ran for a touchdown. Miami stopped. They thought the play was dead, and he ran in for a touchdown. So there was some bad blood in the 70s.
Definitely. And like I said, they recruited well down here in the 70s. I mean, you know, they had the kid Kendrick from Miami Springs and Nugent and Ralph Ortega and Glenn Cameron. And, you know, they got all those guys. But they're not doing that. Nat Moore, players like that. But they're, you know, they've tailed off basically because they don't come down here, and you know, a lot of fans don't get a chance to see them like before. And they just kind of rekindled that this year by getting a couple of good ones. You know, with Ben Hanks Jr. legacy. You know, his dad played there, but still, you know. But the whole thing is, guys, the recruiting has kind of slanted back to Miami, especially in South Florida. They, you know, for all those times, Don, you know, that all those fans, we need to get this guy. But they did, you know. I mean, anywhere area you look at, you know, the Steve Everetts and the Hutchinsons and the Marvin Joneses, they're all going, you know, they're going to get out of there. I mean, that's just the way it is. But you look back at who Miami kept. You know, and nobody knows that better than you, DBJ. I mean, you know, back in the day, but Miami kept a lot of those kids. And, you know, back in the late 70s, like Edison with Wilmore Ritchie and Mark Renaud and all these guys like that, they stayed at home. You know, Steve Marcantonio, who arguably is one of the best receivers to come out of Coral Gables, he stayed there. Dieter Mathis from Miami, New Orleans. So it back in that day, I mean, sure, you had your Chuck Foremans and Woody Thompsons and, you know, other guys that came from other areas, but I think if you look back at those rosters, and I do quite often because I have all those books, and Miami had some kids, you know, that were pretty good, you know, players that never got away. And that used to hurt me the most back in the 90s after Miami went into that funk after 2000, you know, for the last 20 some years, that everyone was, he didn't get them here. He didn't come here. Yeah, but they got their stuff. You know, let's look back at Duke Johnson. He could have gone anywhere he wanted in the world. I mean, and he came here, he was loyal, you know, so, you know, and now you're seeing, because of the energy that Mario Cristobal and his staff are putting forward, you know, and I try to explain this. I do a national show every Wednesday night, and, you know, everybody and a lot of the guys are like from Dallas and Los Angeles that are on with us. And outside of Miami and South Florida, Miami's a 13-13 team. So it shows how great a job that this staff has done to get these marquee kids. And people don't realize it. I mean, you know, that's why people, you know, Bishop Gorman was here from Las Vegas over the weekend. I saw you know, a couple of the SJ file, Tali, who just committed there earlier, big kid, didn't play, but he was a good kid. And that's the thing, you know, I mean, talking to the coach, he goes, oh, yeah. I mean, Brevin Jordan and, you know, the kid that Joe and I were just talking about, who I think is going to be a freak. We were talking about that, and they don't care. They just like the energy that Miami brought. And, you know, when you get Mario Cristobal in his office and they're talking to mom and dad, hey, listen, you know, it's a whole different world. And the thing is from a selling point, is Mario Cristobal is a Miami Hurricane. He's got 2 degrees from the school. He grew up loving the Hurricane. So him going out and selling is not really selling. He's telling the truth. And that's, I think, why they're landing a lot of these kids, because they want to, they feel the energy and they see what's happening and they see the coaching staff and they see the kids that they're bringing in. And it's kind of like the dominoes are falling. And, you know, and obviously, you know, when you pick up a guy like Cam Ward and you pick up a guy like Brown and you get a kid like Martinez, I mean, those kids could have gone anywhere. I mean, anywhere. They were the best of the portal, and look where they ended up.
Hey, Blue, you bring up a lot of names, and you bring up a lot of guys that had tough decisions to make. But I think one of the best things that about this rivalry is that it lasts the whole year. You know, when Miami was playing Florida, Florida's playing Miami consecutively, every year this game was a topic. Now that it's sporadic at best, it certainly has lost some of that. But one of the best parts about it, in my opinion, was every year, as soon as it was over, you're ready to start talking about the next one.
No doubt. No doubt. And Don, you guys will be in the booth on Saturday. And if you look down there, right, probably an hour, half hour before the game, you're going to see why that rivalry is so important. There's over 300 recruits that will be there. And that shows you the magnitude of, even though they, as you said, they're sporadic, playing each other, but that's how much this game means. There's going to be some recruiting battles that have already taken place between the two schools that could be at least won that day. You know, and I'm not one of those big one game, and you know, I'm committed to them. And see, I'm not like that. But you put that in their head. You know, so when, you know, like the Jamie French kid that they're still after, you know, from Mandarin and people like that, if they're in attendance, that may push them over and say, oh, man, look at the energy Miami came out with. Look at the athletes they have. And, you know, and all that's going to do is translate to them getting more and more and more. And, you know, and I tell this story back in the, you know, in the late 80s and all into the early 2000s, that when I went to the spring games, I would walk behind the bench and you would look at the names and you go, oh my gosh, I didn't forgot they had him. And I forgot they had him. That's where Miami needs to get back to. They need to get back to that type of depth. And I think that they're well on the way. And believe me, nobody follows this recruiting as well as I do. And I know some of the kids that they got are, you know, for the 2025 class and the next cycle are crazy good at, you know, at every level.
All right, Larry Bluestein is with us. Joe Zgacki, Don Bailey Jr., and Old Blue. We'll take a break. We'll come back, talk more about recruiting, Canes and Gators, and also, a tough weekend for South Florida high school sports. We'll talk about that with Blue as we continue on the hotline right after this.
Now back to Hurricane Hotline on the home of the U, AM 560 and FM 96.5 HD2 WQAM. Driven by Williamson Cadillac. For value, style, and performance, visit Miami's premier luxury dealership. Click WilliamsonCadillac.com now. Here's Don Bailey Jr. and the voice of the Hurricanes, Joe Zagacki.
Canes and Gators on Saturday. Our broadcast begins at 11 a.m. with a storm is coming. I think you're going to enjoy our theme on Saturday. Kickoff at 3:30. Don and I will be there with Josh on the sidelines. Larry Bluestein with us right now. Blue, it was a tough weekend for the local teams in high school football. We had Bishop Gorman came in. They won. Don Bosco came in. They won. Milton, Georgia came in. The good news for Miami is that the quarterback, who was a UM commit, looked really good. They knocked off Heritage. What happened to our teams?
Well, first of all, you alluded to three games, and those are all, they were all on national TV, ESPN. But let's face it, Bishop Gorman's the defending national champions, loaded with talent. And for St. Thomas to take them down to the wire like they did was great. Same thing with John Bosco. You're looking at a Chaminade team that lost 20 kids from last year, nine Power Four kids, and still right down to the last drive of the ball game, Chaminade was in it. And then American Heritage, obviously, you know, Malachi Tony, University of Miami commit, you know, for the next cycle in 2026. Did a really good job. But, you know, as you mentioned, Luke Nichols, he's a stud. He's one of those guys that Georgia gets. He's one of those guys that, you know, Ohio State are, and now you see it shows you, Don, now Miami's getting those dudes. They're getting those Gavin Nixes and Hilton Stubbs and guys who, you know, in the past may have gotten somewhere else. You look at a Brock Schott, who's the tight end of the future. I mean, this is a kid that's obviously a stud. I mean, he's from Indiana, so that puts him in a position where he could go to Notre Dame or all those. And, yeah, so that's what it was. I mean, it wasn't so much that, you know, they got beat. They were in the games, and ESPN had to be been thrilled to death, guys, because those games, usually when you have some games like that, they could be runaways and then nobody's watching. But nobody left their TV for the Friday night game or the two on Saturday. And yeah, and I missed the game on Friday night because I've seen Luke Nichol all summer at 7-on-7. So I went to see Miami Central play Lakeland, and which I thought was going to be a good game until Central turned the ball over three times and had 11 penalties. But yeah, it was great football, and you're right. I mean, you hate to lose, but I'll tell you what, entertaining, a lot of prospects on both sides of the, you know, both sides of the ball. The kid that a lot of people wanted to come to see is the S.J. Olafatuli from Bishop Gorman, a Miami commitment, big kid at like 6'3", 280. He didn't play, but he's on the sideline, you know, and he was talking with – yes.
That I've seen tape on him now. He can play.
Stud.
He's a true freshman, and I'm not going to put it past him, and I never go down this road, but as good as he looks in high school, that I wouldn't be surprised if he comes in and competes as a true freshman next year at center.
He's
that good.
Well, you're right, and you know, I mean, we're talking this year's version of Mauanoa, obviously, and you know, Don, yeah. you should be over the moon with this, you know, with this 2025 class, because you know they got so, and I got a chance to see all the kids play. The Max Buchanan kid out of Sanford Seminole, he's like 6'4", 280, versatile. He's playing tackle, but he can play guard and center. The Demetrius Campbell kid, you know, from Orlando Christian Prep. Another kid, but a guy I think is a sleeper out of the whole group, and I'm not a big star guy, but he was a lower star guy. His name is Jaden Wilkerson. He's out of Orlando Edgewater, 6'6", 330. And I'll tell you what, you watch him, and he runs everywhere. You know, he's not one of those lazy guys, you know, that kind of, but he's real good. And this next cycle, this 2026 cycle, they could set them up for really the future. Ty Wise's son, and I told you about him last year, the kid's 6'4". 295, 42 offers, including Alabama and Ohio State and Georgia. And, you know, Ty, and I talked to Ty quite a bit. And the kid is the blueprint. Got size. He's a tremendous athlete, a two-time state weightlifting champion. And, oh, by the way, a 4.4 student. So that's the type of guy. And, you know, Ty has not put no pressure on him. In fact, the three times he's come down, his mom's come with. Because, and I understand that, because, you know, when he's down there, everyone's going to be paying attention to his dad. And, but I'll tell you what, if Miami's in a good shape to land him, and if they do, along with a couple of other kids that they got, but not for the 25 class, but for the 26 class. But I'll tell you guys, this 25 class is really exciting. Like I said, now Hilton Stubbs from Mandarin, he's Jamie French's buddy. And if they could pull in Jamie French, who's arguably the best or the second best receiver in the country, that'll be a heck of a – this 25 class already is ranked 10th, and they still aren't finished. And we had a chance last week also to see Gerard Pringle, the running back that they got out of Armwood. What a beast. Huh. I mean, this kid, once he breaks the plane, he's gone. And he ran for about 180 on Norlin in the spring game. And Yeah, they're coming up with defensive backs like Bryce Fitzgerald and Chris Ewald out of Chaminade Madonna. As I mentioned, Luke Nickel. They're staying with the linebackers. I think that, you know, they're going for the athletic guys. You know, the guys like Elijah Melendez, Kasimi Asiolu's kind of a big kid at 6'3". But Ezekiel Marcelin, who's, you know, out of Miami Central, that's one of those kids. But I'll tell you guys, that's what happens when, you know, when you have a positive staff and when you have a staff. And let me tell you, they're not to say anything about any of the previous regimes, but they went out of the way not to have events on campus. But as you know, Don, you attended a lot of them. This regime, that's all they want. They want those 7-on-7s. They want those camps. They want those, you know, those prospect, you know, events. And that's how it is. I mean, and the parents come and you get a chance to see all this stuff. It's crazy.
How they had the spring game on campus. So
yeah.
How about this kid, the Lewis kid, the running back from Heritage? He's a monster too.
Well, you know what? Miami's still in the running for him. There's a lot of other schools, obviously, too. Byron's one of those guys. He's a Miami guy type because, you know, not only a tremendous running back, but he's a great student and a great kid, you know. And that's what Miami – that's probably the theme of this class. You know, you talk to any of those guys like Gavin Nix, you know, who's at IMG, is from Apopka area, you know, and Hilton Stubbs. I kind of knew that Hilton Stubbs would be a Hurricane. I mean, I talked to he and his parents when they were down here, but it's a little odd that he was committed to USC, but he was at Miami three times, you know, so that's kind of a telltale sign. And was a former teammate of Derek Plask, who's, you know, on campus now, a big lineman that you watched on. But I you can't be any happier. They wrestled the kid Jabori Antoine away from LSU. Obviously, he lost one, but that's not over. And that's a great thing, because when you mention that to Mario or anybody else about some of these battles, and he goes, hey, this isn't over yet. So I like that. And that's a great attitude to have.
You know, Blue, they say it's not over yet, because once the commitment is made, then the work really begins.
Yeah, you're right. That's a good way to look at it. I mean, and now the kids are going in early, and I'll tell you what, if there was ever anything that really makes a difference, is when the kids can enroll in January, because by the time you see them after spring, guys, not just physically, and not because they grow up, because they have to, you know, they go from high school and they're mixing in with 23-year-old college kids, but from a maturity level, because a lot of them have to be on their own and make decisions that they've never made before. Mom and dad have always been there. And, because all of them live down there, and then, you know, they come home on weekends if they can, throw the wash down for mom to take. But, hey, let me tell you something. The maturity level that you get in those 4 months, those 5 months, when those kids go to prom or graduation at the end of the year, these guys are men. And, you know, I mean, and I think that's the best thing that ever happened. And I know that a lot of the private schools were a little bit against it, but now they have to, you know, or they'll lose those kids their senior year. Now they have to let these kids graduate, you know, early, because it's imperative, because especially nowadays, look how much Miami got done with all those kids that were on campus, you know, in January, February, March, and into April.
Blue, before we let you go, the game Saturday, how do you see this thing shaking out?
I think it's going to come down to the wire, guys. I just really, you know, I think that crowd just makes a difference. Miami can't turn the ball over. And I know that Cam Ward has been in situations like this, but a lot of these kids haven't. This is a very loud place to play. You know how it is. They got talent. It's not like Florida's, you know, coming here without any talent. I just think this game is going to be one of those contests that people talk about. I think that's going to set. I think Miami wins it, but it's going to be one of those contests that goes four quarters, and we'll see, because the next 5 weeks they pretty much can call their own shots. Although I think this group and this team has learned a lot about looking too far ahead.
Yeah, no question about that. All right, Blue, always great to have you with us. You'll join us on the pregame show on Saturday, right?
Yep, we'll be there. I guess I'm on 11:30, and then we'll see at some of the home games this year. I'm looking forward to it. This is, you know, it's crazy, guys, that you have 8 months off. So that just means that we have a 4 month season. Yeah. So those 8 months, they kind of go by a little bit slow sometimes. But yep, we're excited. And, I think that this will be a banner year for Miami, and one that'll keep the recruiting on fire.
All right, Blue, thanks for being with us. I'll see you.
All right, guys. Thank you.
the Canes are on the sidelines of a high school game. Perhaps. All right, Don. We'll be on Saturday at 11:30. I'll see you tomorrow briefly down there at whether it'll be on Saturday at 11 o'clock. Blues on 11:30. I'll see you tomorrow on campus as we put our finishing touches on game prep for Miami and Florida. Hard to believe that it's here.
It's hard to believe it's here, but I'm glad it is. Looking forward to it.
All right. I'll see you tomorrow. That's Don Bailey Jr., Larry Bluestein, Dan Radakovich, Mario Cristobal. Trevor Harris has been our producer. Thanks for joining us. We will talk to you on Saturday from Gainesville, beginning at 11 a.m. for our big countdown to kick off Miami and Florida with a 3:30 kickoff. Canes and the Gators doesn't get much better. We'll talk to you on Saturday.